Y'all might notice, some of you will, the screen might look a little bit brighter. If you're paying close attention, it looks a lot brighter, but sharper, clearer. And we've got a couple of new projectors, and they've got a new soundboard. Hopefully things will be a little clearer, a little less hum in it, we're hoping. But let's begin with our memory verses, and you know, I've been charitable. Maybe we just call them our reading verses this quarter. But a lot of your children and grandchildren are going to have these next quarter. Genesis 1, 1 through 3. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was without form and void, and darkness was on the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters. Then God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. And I just remind you again, those verses are chosen as they help us to appreciate that the book of Genesis and really the entire Bible is from our Creator God, that we are not here by accident, that there is an Almighty who made this world, who shaped this world and shaped mankind, and we are accountable to Him. Chapter 12 points us not to the Creator, but to the covenant God. The God who entered into covenant relationship with man, and He called Abraham. Verse 1, "Now the Lord had said to Abram, 'Get out of your country and from your family and from your father's house to a land that I will show you. I will make you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great, and you shall be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and I will curse him who curses you, and in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed.'" The most important part of that, as it relates to us, is the last part of it. That through Abraham, and as he would say later on, Genesis 22:18, "In your seed all the nations of the earth will be blessed." That seed is Christ, Galatians 3:16. But there are steps along the way, and part of that, verse 2, "I will make you a great nation." The next couple of lessons as we close out Genesis are really key steps toward becoming that great nation. Now, in just a couple of weeks, we start the book of Exodus. And I know many of you have studied Exodus recently, but we're going to do it again. And material is there in the back for you, on the little lectern. Pick that up. July the 7th, you know, be ready. We'll get it started then. We'll see that nation emerge. But key steps are taken in these next couple of lessons. And finally, Genesis 50, verses 19 and 20. "Joseph said to them, 'Do not be afraid, for am I in the place of God? But as for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good, in order to bring it about as it is this day, to save many people alive.'" The story of Joseph has a lot of value in a lot of different ways. But those couple of verses point to one of the great benefits of the story of Joseph. It ought to build our faith and trust in the providence of God. Joseph goes through some incredibly difficult times, some adversity that would destroy the faith of many people. As far as we know, his faith never wavered. There were never any outward signs of it. Maybe he had his moments of doubt. But in the end, he came to really be able to look back at that big picture and say, "As I was going through all of that, God was working his plan." Let's turn to chapter 44 and pick up where we left off. And for the PowerPoint, this is the only thing I'm going to have today, just this map. I want us to make sure we'll follow the adventures. Here's the land of Canaan. And the family of Jacob at this time is living down in the southern part of Canaan. And we go back and forth between there and Egypt. And in chapter 44, Remember where we are. Joseph had risen from being a household slave, then a prisoner, to now he's number two in command over all of Egypt. He had correctly interpreted the dream of Pharaoh and explained 7 years of plenty, followed by 7 years of famine, and instructed the people, "This, we've got to get ready. We've got a plan for this." And they put Joseph in charge of the planning. And then when the famine starts, Joseph's in charge of the distribution of grain. And you remember his brothers came to him. They didn't recognize him. He doesn't know who they are. And he's putting them to the test. Well, in chapter 43, they have this very interesting gathering. Joseph still doesn't reveal himself, but he welcomes them as guests into his house. It's as if to make them really feel at ease. Hey, everything's good. And then he puts them to the final test. He has the steward to take his silver cup, his special cup, Joseph's special cup, and put it in the sack of Benjamin. As we were looking Wednesday night, right at the end, the steward lets them get away out of town. Then he pursues them. And he says, if whoever this cup's found with is going to be the slave of my master. Well, of course, the steward knew what to do. And in dramatic fashion, you just picture this. As they're going through sack after sack, there's no cup, and the guys are going, "We tried to tell you. You know, we didn't steal anything." And then they get to the sack of Benjamin. And there's that cup. The cup, the sack of Benjamin. The child that the father wouldn't allow to go at first. And was so reluctant to allow to go down there. Who's now the favorite son. And so, take note. We left off at verse 14. I made mention of this right as we closed. This is significant. So Judah and his brothers came to Joseph's house. That's a new expression, isn't it? Judah is emerging as the clear leader of the sons. In order of birth, he's fourth. But he was the one that persuaded the father, that said, "Look, I will be the guarantee. I will be the surety. We're going to all starve here if you don't let us take Benjamin down to Egypt." And now the writer says Judah and his brothers. Well, they go back, and Joseph, still playing his part, said, "You didn't think I could practice divination? That I could know who stole my cup?" And, you know, Judah speaks. How can we clear ourselves? When he says in verse 16, "God has found out the iniquity of your servants," I don't think he at all intends this to be a confession of "we stole the cup." This is that guilty conscience that, you remember, the very first time that Joseph started into the, "You are slaves, you are spies, I'm going to put you in prison," and they all go, "This is because of what we did to Joseph." The guilty conscience of these men said, and Judah says, "We've done a lot of wickedness in our lives. And we are willing to be your slaves. We and he also with whom the cup was found." Now, what does Joseph do? Joseph says, "No. Just the one will stay here and be my slave. The rest of you can go in peace. Go back home." Now, look at this scenario. These are the men who once went back home as their brother is being sold into slavery. and Joseph is giving them the chance to do what they did to him. The very same thing. Just leave Benjamin here and y'all head on home. You can go in peace. Judah comes and makes what is the longest recorded speech in the book of Genesis. You know, and he pleads with him. And he asks, you know, verse 18, don't let your anger burn against your servant. And he rehearses all of this, how you asked these questions before. Verse 20, we told you, we have a father, an old man, and a child of his old age who is young. His brother is dead. How many times have they told Joseph that he was dead? You know, I mean, he's standing there, and you wonder sometimes how he managed to keep the straight face during some of these times. But his brother is dead, and he alone is left of his mother's children, and his father loves him. They had been so resentful, so jealous of the love of their father for Joseph. Now Judah just says, look, our dad loves this son. And, you know, we had to beg to bring him down here. And, you know, I had to make promises. And look at 27 and 28. Your servant, my father, Judah is relating to Joseph the words of Jacob. And I think this is a revelation to Joseph. You know that my wife bore me two sons, and the one went out from me, and I said, surely he has torn to pieces, and I have not seen him since. Joseph, as far as we know, had no idea why his father never tried to help him, never tried to save. Jacob was a wealthy man. He could have purchased Joseph, you know, repurchased him 10 times over. His grandfather raised up an army to rescue Lot. I have to believe that Joseph wondered sometime, why hasn't he come? But now he learns. His father thought he'd been killed by wild animals. And he said in verse 29, the words of his father, take this one from me also, and if calamity befalls him, you will bring my gray hair with sorrow to the grave. And Judah says, look, if he sees the lad is not with us, he will die. I was the promise. I was the surety. Let your servant remain instead of the lad. Let the lad go up with his brothers. Verse 34, for how shall I go to my father if the lad is not with me, lest perhaps I see the evil that would come upon my father? Now, let's think. Which one of the brothers had the idea to sell Joseph? That would be Judah, wouldn't it? That's Judah. Judah was the one that proposed selling him because of their resentment toward Joseph, resentment toward the jealousy of the father. And here is, think about what Judah is saying. He is saying, I know that if I get left behind as a slave, it won't hurt my father near as much as Benjamin being left behind. How easy is that for a son to come to grips with? You know, I'm somewhat expendable. And I don't think Judah's saying that my dad doesn't care about me. But he loves this other one more. And yet, he's come to care enough about his father that he says, it's okay. I will stay behind. I will take the place of the one thought to be guilty. Yeah. And in fact, I mean, most of them, I don't know about all of them, but we know Judah, it specifically talks about, he went out and got a wife after that happened. You know, there is that. And the way, when we go back a chapter or two, that their minds immediately jump to, this is happening because of what we did to Joseph. I think it has weighed on them. They have seen it. Never enough that they would come clean to their father. You know, but they have had it all these years. It could have been. It you know, that may have played a part in it. Yeah. That's true. Whether they would have or not, I don't know after this, but Judah did the noble thing. And I don't know how long Joseph intended all this to go on. But when you talk about an unfortunate chapter break, you know, our chapter divisions were put in many years after the scripture was completed. This is one of those that, I mean, it just right in the middle of the thought breaks it. But that's when Joseph finally just says, everybody get out of here. It, you know, he's looking at his servants. He can't take it anymore. And all the Egyptians have gone out of the house. And he weeps so loudly that people in the other rooms, you know, outside hear it. And you just imagine this scene, verse 3. And probably for the first time he speaks Hebrew in their presence. I am Joseph. And his question is, does my father still live? As if you guys haven't been using this as a story, have you? And when he says, I am Joseph, that doesn't suddenly give them a warm fuzzy, does it? They're like, oh boy. You know, second most powerful man in Egypt. And we all know what we did to him. And he says to them, come near me. And look, let's read verse 4 and 5. So they came near. Then he said, I am Joseph, your brother, whom you sold into Egypt. This is not just letting them off the hook. You know, well, nothing. You sold me. But now, do not therefore be grieved or angry with yourselves because you sold me here. For God sent me before you to preserve life. For these 2 years, the famine has been in the land. And there are still 5 years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvesting. And God sent me before you to preserve a posterity for you in the earth and to save your lives by a great deliverance. So now it was not you who sent me here, but God. At what point did Joseph come to the idea that all of this has been the providence of God? I don't think when he was serving in the house of Potiphar. Joseph was faithful to the Lord, but he had no idea this is a great plan. I don't know if even when the years of plenty were going on and they're saving up all this grain. Just when? But what faith he has at this point to say, he's not excusing their wickedness any more than when Peter on the day of Pentecost says it was the determined counsel and foreknowledge of God that led to the crucifixion of Christ. Because at the end of the sermon, he says, you crucified him. You know, you're guilty. But God is able to take even the most wicked of acts and work them in his providence to deliver. And that's what he's done. And he says, now, look, y'all got to come on. There's still 5 years. Come on down to Egypt. And he said, I've got the place for you. We're going to put you in Goshen, which is in the Delta. You know, let me just give you a little geography about Egypt. If you ever read about Upper and Lower Egypt, it's one of the hardest things for me to remember is this is Upper Egypt down here. This is Lower Egypt at the top, of our maps. You know, we always point our maps north and south, you know. But what was the lifeblood of Egypt? The Nile River. And it is Lower Egypt. When you read about Lower Egypt, it refers to the ending of the Nile River. Well, every part of Egypt was affected, but the region around Goshen would be among the least affected because it had the ability to be irrigated to some degree. You know, you've got water. He says, this is where we're going to settle you. He said, I'm going to provide for you. And then in 14 and 15, he first goes to his full brother Benjamin, the one brother that was not part of the selling of him into Egypt also, might add that. And they wept. And then he kissed all his brothers and wept over them. And verse 15 says, and after that, his brothers talked with him. I have a feeling that it didn't start out with, hey, you know, let me tell you about my kids. I've got a stone carving of one of my grandkids here, you know. I bet the first words they spoke were, I'm sorry. but they talk. And then word comes to the house of Pharaoh. And Pharaoh's happy about this. And I mean, Joseph's already made up his mind. He's bringing him to Egypt. But Pharaoh says, hey, here's an idea. Bring your family down to Egypt and give them the best of the land of Egypt. And verse 19, here, get some carts, some wagons. You know, we want to make this as easy as possible. You know, take these and you go back and Pharaoh gives them provisions for the journey. And verse 22, Joseph gives his full brother some special privileges. In addition to the donkeys, the brothers would have brought with them. This time they load down donkeys, it says, verse 23, with the good things of Egypt. And they put 10 female donkeys with grain and bread and food for the journey. You just think about the contrast between the journey they had made down to Egypt is their brother Simeon's in prison. They've got Benjamin with them. And they know how their father is worried sick about this. They're going back to say, look, we didn't steal the money. You know, they look like thieves. They've been accused of being spies. Well, this time as they're heading back, they're going back with all these good things from Egypt. Their brother is second in command. their brother has been gracious and forgiving to them. And what a difference this journey. But verse 24 is interesting. Even to the, there's some different translations of it. As they left, he said, "See that you do not become troubled along the way." Some translations say that you do not fall out along the way. And that's probably the most literal rendering. The question is fall out. We sometimes talk about having a falling out, and we mean arguing, quarreling. The English Standard says, do not quarrel along the way. The New King James has do not become troubled, as in, and you can see both. They start back up to Canaan, and Reuben turns to him and says, "Judah, I know you made a great speech down there, but if it hadn't been for you, I mean, we could have, do you realize what this man could have done to us? Look what you've put our father through all these years." And, you know, they could have done that. Or just the whole idea of becoming troubled. Going, that really went well. You know, well, what if he changes his mind? Yeah, and how are we going to tell Dad? That's a, you know, Dad, you remember that coat with the blood a few years ago? We sure did fool you, didn't we? Dad, you should have, I can just see one of them going, "Dad, you should have known better than just take our word for it. You know, why didn't you investigate? It's your fault." But whatever the case, they get back. And now picture this. Jacob's 130 years old. He has thought his favorite was dead for 22 years. For several weeks now, probably, at least a couple, his next favorite, the replacement favorite, has been gone. And they told him, "Joseph is still alive, and he's the governor of Egypt." Right. And they almost killed him with that news. His heart stood still. I just kind of, for those of you who remember Sanford and Son, I just picture, it's the big one here, he just can't believe it. And they told him everything. And he looks and he sees all these carts loaded down and the extra donkeys and extra provisions, and his spirit revives. And what does he say? "It is enough. Joseph, my son, is still alive. I will go and see him before I die." And I don't think that's a morbid at all. He just say, sometimes we talk about a bucket list, Okay, now I can die. And this is something I really wanted to accomplish. And he says, "I'm good." And so they load up and they come to Beersheba. And I don't have Beersheba on the map here. It's not on this one. But Beersheba is well to the south. In fact, it kind of became known as the southern border later. What's the expression in the times of the kings when they want to say from north to south? They will say from Dan to Beersheba. And he comes there, and notice he's called Israel. Israel. This is the journey of Israel into Egypt. And he offers sacrifices, and God speaks with him and calls him Jacob. To begin with, which is interesting. Repeats his name twice. Verse 3, "I am God, the God of your father. Do not fear to go down to Egypt." Let me just pause. Abraham, he went down to Egypt, didn't he? That was a failure of faith when he went down. His faith failed him in Egypt when he lied about Sarah. When there was a famine in the land in the days of Isaac, do you remember what the words of God were? Do not go down into Egypt. Jacob pauses at Beersheba to offer sacrifices to God. And I think from the way the Lord speaks to him, it is to make certain that this is in the will of God. And the Lord says to him, do not fear to go down to Egypt, for I will make of you a great nation there. I will go down with you to Egypt, and I will also surely bring you up again, and Joseph will put his hand on your eyes. Let me look at verse 4. That's interesting. I will bring you up again. When does Jacob return to the land of Canaan? After his death. And, you know, which is a statement of faith. We'll talk more about that Wednesday night, Lord willing. Joseph will put his hand on your eyes. What does that mean? Yeah, that's the, at death, you know, the old, that was, it was custom, the loved one would do that. What he's saying is, think about that. He's saying, you and Joseph won't be separated again. Joseph's 39 years old at this point. 22 years of separation. Now, if you like symmetry, how long was Joseph with Jacob before being sold? 17 years. Then you've got 22. How long will he be with Joseph in Egypt? 17. You know, I like that. 17, 22, 17. It's not quite as easy as Moses. 40 in Egypt, 40 in Midian, 40 leading the people. But 17, 22, 17 is not bad. Mm-hmm. One of the things is, was he aware of what God had said to Abraham back in chapter 15, that your people will be afflicted in a foreign land? If so, wait a minute, they're going down there as welcome, the welcome family of a hero. God had spoken of that. I think there's a lot of reasons. You know, should I leave the promised land? But God says, yes, you go down there and you'll become a great nation. You wonder about that, and it may be partly the fact that he's 130 and he's walked with a limp ever since, you know, his wrestling with the angel. But what I want you to note in the plan of God, think about what happened in chapter 38 with Judah. How that Judah marries a Canaanite woman, and two of his sons are killed. Judah commits that abomination with the harlot. He thinks a harlot. You look at chapter 34 with Dinah and Shechem. They go down into Egypt. And what's it going to tell us repeatedly? It's already told us. What about dinner for Egyptians and Hebrews? They don't eat together. What's he about to say about the occupation of these men? They're shepherds, and how do Egyptians feel about that? That's an abomination to them. In Canaan, they were seen as a wealthy family, and there was great advantage to being part of this and joining up with this family and getting this family to join in with you. And remember, that was the argument of Shechem and his father. Look, we'll make covenants with them. We will agree with them. And their stuff's going to become ours. You know, we're going to absorb them into us. God is sending them to a place where they will become a nation, a separate people. So they all go down there, and it names, and without looking down, I want you to name all 70 people, all the sons and grandsons. It gives us all these names of the sons, and it groups them by, you know, the wives, and includes Joseph and his sons, and we've got 70. Now I want you to think about it. That's the number to remember when we get to Exodus and they come out of Egypt. And we've got over 600,000 men. They went down as 70. 70 is a large family. I mean, I'd be horrified if that many showed up for a family reunion, you know, unless they brought fried chicken. You know, but no, I mean, that's a big family, but that's all that is a big family. But then think about where we were one generation before that. We were one. You know, we were at Isaac. And then Rebecca, his wife, well, there are two of them. You know, it's starting to expand. And so they're going down into Egypt. And we'll stop there. I can pick it at verse 28. I know I hate breaking in the middle of a chapter, but I hate even worse breaking in the middle of a thought. Any questions, thoughts before that dreaded bell rings? Larry's making his move toward it as I speak. All right, Wednesday night, let's pick up at verse 28 and notice again who is sent before, who is the leader of the family.